Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is November 7th, 2016. This is Austin Walker coming to you live from the bunker. Joining me here in the bunker again, Danielle Riendo.
Hello, it's good to be in a bunker.
Yeah, November
right
7th.
Now?
It sure is. Also joining me on the line, Patrick Klepek from the field.
I know everyone gets real nervous on N7 Day.
That's why everyone's nervous. Mass Effect stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I feel like there's an energy in the air that is... I saw someone on Twitter, I forget who it was now, describe this as like feeling a little bit like Christmas Eve and the day before a major surgery combined
yep.
into one.
Yep. It sure is.
And, whew. How are y'all feeling?
Scared.
Look, I'm feeling great because I watched the most amazing Twitter video, and I was describing it to the both of you, and then you stopped me so I could re-describe it.
It's like, stop, I want to hear it fresh. Give it to me fresh on the recording.
So if people have probably heard of the documentary series Planet Earth, which a number of years ago, but it's a series of just really incredible documentary footage of just nature. Like, they use these amazing lenses to catch insects and just Earth in like really like amazing ways. Like, they do storytelling. Like, it's not
right.
just giving you information. Like, they show you stories of what's happening out in nature. And so I guess the new one is airing. I was unaware of the sequel to Planet Earth, but there's a clip going around where this and this is going to sound horrifying as I begin to describe it, but this baby iguana, like this new hatchling, somehow, I don't know the context of the clip, but it opens with the hatchling being stuck in sort of like this kind of rocky, sandy area. And there's this a snake around it kind of eyeing it. And, snakes can't see very well, but, respond to movement and, are very sensitive to that. And so the hatchling is staying extremely still. It is not moving. It is waiting for the snake to get far enough away where it then just begins sprinting for its life and going at a speed that is obviously amped up by the slow motion and the music, but like it is as though it is being chased by a demon. And what you then soon...
Sorry, we're watching it live as you live narrate this.
Yes, and you soon realize it is not just one snake, but they are in a snake den. There are dozens.
There are so many snakes.
Oh, my God.
Yes,
look at all these snakes.
It's harrowing. And I don't really want to say... I will relieve your anxiety. It does not die. It makes it through. It escapes. But I don't want to necessarily give you the beat by beat of what happens during that escape because it is better than any action film you will watch and is incredibly terrifying. But I will at least let you know that it ends well, at least as well as nature goes. I'm sure the iguana will be killed by something else in the cruelty of nature. But at
right.
least in this clip, it is. It made me anxious, but then ends so wonderfully that in terms of how you can start your week for a week like this,
yeah,
there are a few better ways, I think.
I like it as a metaphor because it isn't all smiles. It's a rocky, dangerous world filled with snakes.
It is actually like the arc of that video is actually incredibly accurate in which like you think you're okay, you go to the final sprint, you almost lose it at the finish line, and then you just barely make it to the other side. But did you? What did you lose in the process?
right, exactly. You discovered a lot about the world you were in. You thought the world was one way. It was another way.
It was filled with snakes, really.
Things were easier before you knew you were surrounded by snakes. We all just thought it was like, of course there's a snake. Of course there's a snake or two. But you feel like it's mostly iguanas out there.
Right.
Turns out, a lot of hidden snakes.
You're swimming in a sea of snakes. Good Lord.
And the lesson is to just not move.
I guess so, right? Or it's like, don't move or run as fast as you fucking can.
Nothing in between.
Yeah. God. So is that, this is a very selfish question. Do you know if Planet Earth 2 is coming out on 4K?
Oh.
I have to, well, I don't, I probably in Blu-ray form.
Right.
But, you know, the big hurdle for 4K, and 4K is obviously in the news because the PlayStation 4 Pro launches later this week. Yeah, like streaming services don't really do 4K. Like Netflix, well, I guess Netflix does with very specific
and
things.
Amazon Prime
iTunes has no 4K.
Amazon Prime has very limited 4K also. I just got a 4K TV. So
oh.
So they sent an evaluation review unit of the PS4 Pro, which I left in the office over the weekend because I didn't anticipate getting a 4K TV that quickly. I was like, oh, maybe next week I'll try to get it. And then so I'm in New York, which means like I know a guy. Like, it's a thing that happens when you live in New York. It's just a thing that happens. Like, you got to – sometimes you know a guy. You know a guy with a deal.
Make sure he doesn't jersed you.
He didn't jersed me. Like, don't worry. He hooked it up. And he, like, saved me $300 on a nice TV. And it's the first time I've had – this is the first time I've had a TV with a remote control that's worked in 7 years.
Good.
It's like I've been using, like, a little 27-inch TV for the last 7 years. This is the first, like, decent TV I've had. And then I got it. I was like, I'm going to set it up. And I set it up, and I made room for it, and it's really pretty. And I was like, all right, what can I – watch on this 4K TV. It's like, oh, nothing. Like,
yeah,
basically nothing. And so I started Man in the High Castle, which is the Amazon Prime. That's in 4K.
Okay.
But it just looked weird. It looked like very strange because I'm not used to seeing things that crisp. And like, I want something like a Planet Earth to like break in the TV with and like get used to seeing stuff like
you want that baby iguana.
I want that baby
in
iguana.
Beautiful 4K.
I want this is like a sloth or something swimming that I'm looking at. I don't know what this is.
Yeah.
That's what I want. But I don't know if it's out on 4K yet.
What size TV did you get?
40 inches, which is.
That's about what you need to get to appreciate 4K,
that is the smallest 4K TV there is. That is what I look. So I live in New York. I have like a decent sized apartment, but I don't have like. My setup is such that it would be a pain to have a TV that I – this TV had to fit on the desk is what I have to say. So I have I have like a decent monitor now, which I bought recently, and then I have a 4K TV. It's also on the desk as a second monitor, and that will also be like hooked up to the PS4.
Sure.
And so that was a situation where I was like, oh, I would love if I could get like a 32-inch. But I also understand that that's like – not how 4K works. Like,
yeah, you'd be paying a lot of money for something that wouldn't display on your TV in an appreciable
exactly,
way.
Exactly. And so I've tried a couple things out. Like I did the thing that you get when you get a new piece of hardware, which is like, I'm going to load The Witcher up. I'm going to load up Skyrim.
Perfect.
I'm going to load up Mafia 3 at highest settings. Like, I just jump from game to game to game until it's something that's like, oh yeah, this is pretty. And a couple of things definitely were like, dog, you need more RAM. Like, you have a great graphics card now. You have a good TV, but like your computer can't just handle anything.
You can start because you have a 1070.
I have a Titan GTX.
Okay, right. So at that point you're just going to be hitting CPU and memory limits.
Yep. So I'll get there. Have you been? What have you? So that's what I did this weekend. That's the thing. Is like this weekend coming into the election, I was like, I need to distract myself with stuff. So I did a lot of tabletop game prep, and I did a lot of shopping for a TV. And I found a guy that cut the shopping in half.
You found the guy. Yeah.
What have you two been up to like get your mind ready for this week and relaxed or to not get relaxed? I don't know what your mental state is. Maybe you're like jacked in. You're just like, give it to me straight.
I went to my parents' like tiny lake house and just got away from the internet and video games.
Smart.
And like I sort of like took a break from everything and was like, I'll come back to this and where I can't avoid it. But I still managed to play and finish Titanfall 2's campaign and start the first hour of Infinite Warfare. But other than that, I did my best to just go enjoy the last decent weather that we're probably going to get out here in the Midwest and deal with the crushing cold and everything else from here.
Crushing reality. Well, you did write a really cool story that went up this weekend.
That's
as
true.
Well, that, you know, I read it and I took a look at it and I made the amazing header for it. But I wanted to just hear a tiny bit more about what made you want to write that story. It was about the 90s Senate hearings on violence in video games. And I'm fascinated because I didn't know much about this until I sort of saw your story.
Yeah, we, you know, when we were kind of conceiving what sort of like the first couple weeks of sort of leading up to Waypoint's launch and then the actual launch, like one of the ideas we had was, you know, taking this concept of the games we love and then, you know, picking two of those games and then finding one to sort of write like why that game means something to us and then another that was, you know, let's maybe try and find an original angle for this, whether it's reporting or, you know, doing a sort of a retrospective. And we became so busy that just there was no real way for everyone to contribute something
sure
like that.
Yep.
Yeah, that kind of slipped through. But I managed to kind of, you know, what I became fascinated with was, you know, the games that really defined sort of my pre-teenage years were games like Doom, and which I did write about, and then the other was Mortal Kombat. You know, I distinctly remember Mortal Monday, which right. was this big promotional thing for the console release of the original Mortal Kombat. I remember, you know, getting into so basically, when growing up, most of the cool kids own Nintendo, and the losers own Genesis machines.
Disagree.
It's like a very, you know, crude way of looking at it. That's that we made fun of people that own Sega machines. Like, we looked down on them because the better, cooler games were on Super Nintendo and on NES. And with Mortal Kombat, it was one of the few opportunities for those kids to stab us in the throat. Because Mortal Kombat on the original one, at least on Super Nintendo, Nintendo forced Acclaim, who ported the games to consoles, to nerf the violence. So the fatalities were outright changed, so that most of the violence was removed, or it just was not nearly as egregious as it was in the arcade. The blood was turned to sweat. That if you changed the setting, you could make it red sweat, so it got like a little bit closer. And even the Genesis version was. Toned down, but there was a cheat code you could put in that made it arcade accurate. So anyway, this is a long way to say I was looking for sort of angles on that I wouldn't have considered when I was younger, and it would certainly not be the 1993 Senate hearings in which, you know, Joseph Lieberman was essentially pushing the FEC to investigate video games and this idea that maybe video games were going to have to be regulated by the government as technology was making video games more realistic. And while we may not think of Mortal Kombat or Night Trap as realistic in 2016, at the time when you could put actual actors into video games and you could interact with them, that was a step for a lot of people that made them uncomfortable, or at least it was shocking in a way that, like, I don't blame people for being like raising an eyebrow. And so what I ended up doing was, you know, I was hoping to talk to one of the two executives that spoke on behalf of the video game industry from both Nintendo and Sega. That wasn't really possible, but I spent a number of years working with Perrin Kaplan, who was, you know, sort of the head of communications for Nintendo for a very long time. She was there through a lot of the 80s and up through or a lot of the early 90s and up through the launch of the Wii. And so I met and have worked with her for a number of years. And so I sent her a message asking, you know, were you involved in this? And, you know, she, as it turns out, comes from politics. You know, it's where she met her husband. She still does politics, sort of PR stuff to this day. And she was, you know, part of Nintendo's chief strategist for how to approach Capitol Hill, how to make sure you got folks like Senator Lieberman to think of video games more holistically than just as Mortal Kombat and Night Trap. And so I basically talked to her about Nintendo's strategy and how they kind of painted Sega as a villain on Capitol Hill, in which was... You know, they could, they, you know, Perrin Kaplan made the argument to me that it wasn't a marketing thing. I think she may be looking on that as in slightly rose colored glasses. I agree with her that they had like a strategy that was good for video games as a whole.
Right. It was one of those things where, like, almost by throwing Sega under the bus, they were making the case that the video game industry could self-regulate and did have an ability to discern different sorts of entertainment. But it also,
But also they got to throw their competitor under the bus.
Right.
Yeah. So.
At, like, the largest stage, right?
Yeah. In front of everybody.
Yeah. And so I have this article up, you know, with me talking with Perrin, but I also, you know, if people have time, there are, if you click on, there's a YouTube link in there that has sort of the full hearings. There was a follow-up hearing in 1994 that's far less interesting because basically the industry got its shit together, made the ESRB, had a rating system, and any sort of push for legislation to sort of encroach on video games fell apart.
Right.
But the three-hour hearings are especially watching the intro from Lieberman and the other senator who co-chaired it that I'm blanking on, their opening statements
Cole?
Are interesting.
Something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, yeah. And he, just the way they frame video games and use things like marketing to which the 90s video game marketing was incredibly hyperbolic in terms of how they portrayed violence. And it was just clear that video games are off in their own corner, making tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars and pretending like somehow they managed to get away without a spotlight. And what these hearings did was essentially, I think what I argue in the piece a little bit was it was one of the best things that happened to the industry, because had they not had that moment before they went too much further along, you know, maybe they would have had to face more dire consequences. And instead,
right.
they got their shit together, made the ESRB, and were able to get the government off their back.
Yeah, one of the things that was interesting, too, about that piece, Patrick, was it reminded me that before the ESRB, there was this, like, fragmented, like, each platform holder had their own, like, internal system that wasn't really anything other than, like, a loose advisory system. Like, there was no relationship with retailers. There was no, like, actual, like, decision to say if you were under 18 or under 17, you couldn't buy this or this game. Like, it was just this whole mess of different rating stickers.
Yeah, it was weird. Like, yeah, you know, Sega had their own voluntary rating system, and Nintendo didn't do a rating system, but just made the argument that they were content sort of like gatekeepers,
right.
and that if you bought something on Nintendo, the reason they had things like the seal of quality, which was a gold sticker that was on the box, like things like that were meant to indicate to families, if you buy a Nintendo platform, those games will not appear on our platform, and you don't
right.
so you don't have to worry about what's in the games because we've done that for you, which is not a great system. And,
no,
and,
no.
And Sega's being voluntary is also not a great system. And so all that stuff kind of came together in a way that it's like, okay, there's got to find something that you know, works with retailers, is punishable in some way if retailers don't participate, and that also gets everyone on board in a sort of non-platform
yeah.
specific way.
I do wonder if we'll see a revision of any of this stuff going forward
yeah.
in the near, or not just of the ESRB specifically, but like I go on Steam and I like click on new games and it's like, oh, like half of these are hentai games now.
Yeah.
Like censored hentai games, but like that's a huge portion of the Steam like store shelf now. And it feels like there's another conversation waiting to happen around sex in games, around violence in games again, in hopefully a more mature way that's about opening that space up but still keeping it regulated. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if VR is actually going to be
sure.
sort of what pushes that forward. Being like, there's another step here of you're embodying
mm-hmm.
the person sort of doing this violence as opposed to sort of seeing it on a screen. I wonder if that's going to be the tact they take. I'm not sure.
Like, if
yeah.
you were the sort of person who wanted to have that conversation in a really aggressive way, VR is a great excuse for that.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating because I think that there are conversations to be had around media content, but not ones that are like really unnuanced and just like
this
dismissive.
Is bad.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
like,
for
fuck out of here with that. But
for
like,
sure.
let's have that other conversation and let's be responsible about this media that we love in the same way that like we should be responsible. If you love cars, you should be responsible about emissions and about like making sure that you're not going 60 miles over the speed limit. Like let's reach that common ground, but let's have a conversation about what that common ground is.
Yeah.
Well, and two, just one sort of final thought, like to kind of thread it to the ESRB. The ESRB is in some ways endangered in the sense that Steam, which is essentially where pretty much everyone, you know, if I'm going to paint with a broad brush, buys their games on PC, it is not a requirement to have an ESRB
right.
rating to sell on Steam. It is not a requirement to have an ESRB rating to release something on the Google Play or the App Store.
Sure.
Now, there are sort of content ratings and guidelines on there that that developers have to put, but it is far different than submitting it to sort of a, you know, holistic, you know, organization that's meant to represent the video game industry. If anything, it seems like we're headed towards a world in which as we move to more digital and retail becomes less of a factor, in which there are sort of what happened originally, which was that, you know, we're going to have platform specific approaches to ratings. And now maybe because ratings are just so ingrained, it won't matter as much, it won't
right.
become a thing, but it's kind of fascinating to look at it going back to, in some ways, what it used to be, and that 20 years from now, maybe, you know, the ESRB ratings, you know, are only for the biggest games that are sold at retail, and everything else just kind of does its own thing.
Yeah.
Awesome. I like, Patrick, that the thing that you did now to distract yourself from politics is dig deeper into the history of the politicization of video games.
Well, I love. I mean, if I pay attention to anything other than video games, it is politics. Yeah. But even as someone that would self describe as a political junkie, I am tired of this election it to be over. So it's like it was fascinating to go look at a different time, a different set of subjects, and so I was able to sort of scratch my itch without having to peel my skin off in the same way that I've been doing the last 2 weeks.
Danielle, what about you? What did you do over the weekend?
Oh my God. Well, I went for pure escapism. I also slept a lot, which was awesome.
That's escapism.
That was good. I liked that. But pure escapism, I watched a whole bunch of Yuri on Ice.
Oh, word.
Extremely, extremely gay ice skating anime, which is about this young man. He's 23. He's sort of at the tail end of his figure skating career, and this other incredibly, incredibly attractive dude who is like also a champion ice skater kind of comes into his life and wants to be his coach, and they have this relationship that is very intense. It is just such a wonderful show. It's actually really cool because the show is actually about sort of the mechanics of figure skating and how you practice and how you figure out a routine and how you, you know, choose the music to that routine and how you, you know, how much it's about expressiveness and dance and as well as sort of the technical tricks. And also, of course, about these relationships, these very intense, close relationships that Yuri has with his coach and with his friends. I'm new to anime. I have an anime life coach. Let's put it this way. I have an anime life coach. Yeah, it's all Amanda's fault. Who's been showing me like the sports anime because she knows I'm such a little jock, and she's like, "All right, Danielle, I know what you're gonna like." So she got me really into the bike anime, which I know is probably another bike anime, but
no, that's the bike. If you say Yawapeta, the bike anime,
Yawapeta. Damn it, because
pedals
got it. Pedals
or Yawapeta.
Yawapeta, which is also really cool. Mm-hmm. It's a cool bike anime where again, I'm into it because I'm learning about like the mechanics of cycling and how like, you know, I'm a distance runner. So like sort of adding that in, the strategies of a distance runner and the strategies of like a cyclist who's a sprinter and who's a hill climber and all this stuff. I'm way more into that than like the actual characters, to be honest. Like the characters are cool and I'm excited about them, but
I
want to learn
stuff.
I want to learn about the sports stuff.
Totally.
I became like a, you know, I've always played sports. I've always been like a super, super jock, but I only became like a sports fan in the last couple of years where I actually get really interested in the like the real mechanics, the real nitty gritty of like what a great baseball player does, you know, what a great pitcher does, what a great, you know, athlete of any
of
kind
anything.
Does,
right,
really.
Right. What's it mean to succeed in those different spaces,
exactly,
both like physically and tactically and
yes,
like what the design of it is and what the that's really
I've only just become really into that. I also went to, this was cool, this was really cool, this is what I did last night. I went to an alt circus pole dancing competition.
Okay.
Which is not really pole dancing in the traditional sense. It wasn't really like about the stripping. It was like an aerial act that had to do with
like a Cirque du Soleil.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Which was amazing. And I was like, wow, the human body can move in these ways.
The human body can do a lot of things.
Oh, yeah.
I think next season, next anime season is when we get the pole dancing.
Yes, the pole dancing competition. Anime. Yeah, I hope so, because I want to hear about the moves.
There's the anime that's out this year that is about like butt fighting on floating things on pools. Like girls doing butt fight. That's a thing.
I want to hear about the mechanics of butt fighting.
It's a lot about that.
I want to know about it.
It's a big thing. There's a really great.
Is it called Cheek to Cheek?
It's not called Cheek to Cheek. I don't know.
Oh,
it might, I don't know. Butt fighting anime, I'll put in Google.
Cheek to cheek.
There's a really, I do want to shout out a really great article by Jacob Hope Chapman over on Anime News Network called What's So Gay About Yuri on Ice?
Oh, good.
It's really a really great deep dive into the ways in which queerness has been used in anime over the years, ranging from like kind of unspoken joke to like implicit like fan service where it's like, oh, will they, won't they?
Yeah.
Like what, you know, this article digs deep into the term queer baiting and like takes a very critical but nuanced perspective on that, on whether or not like, hey, is that kind of dismissive of implicit, of the pleasure of implicit queer relationships? Does every queer relationship in media need to be like consummated with physical?
Right.
Like, and so the thing that they end up kind of walking away with is like one of the things that makes Yuri on Ice so special is that it isn't hiding the fact that these two characters are physically attracted to each other. Like that is a thing that recurs and not in a way that is like dressed up so much. Though apparently that does still happen sometimes.
It very much feels like it's building towards maybe something a little more explicit. Like, I don't want to spoil anything, but there's sort of a revelation in the most recent episode where there's an explicit use of the L word. They say love, and it's like, oh.
Ooh, what's that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? There's a lot there, and I have strong feelings about queerbaiting and whether or not something is queerbaiting or not, but I really love this show. It's really good. It's really beautiful. And I did play a video game.
What did you play?
I played more of Even the Ocean, which I talked about a little bit last time, but it's, oh my God, it's so beautiful.
Well, say it one more time. A thing that someone wrote in and requested was like, hey, when we talk about games, let's shout them out at the beginning
of
and
course.
The end, because I always forget that, and it's very useful.
Especially
because we play weird stuff sometimes that is not easy. It's not like on the top of your head. It's on the tip of your tongue. It's a thing they've never heard of before. So what's it called again?
Okay, it's called Even the Ocean. It's from Analgesic Studios, the folks who made Anodyne, if you know about that game. I played a little bit more of it. It is just a really, really beautiful platformer with a lot going on in sort of the story land, the story level. You can actually play it. One thing that's really, I really like about this game, it's not something that I'm using, but the folks who made it, and I believe it's a two-person team, really. They wanted it to be so accessible that you could just kind of play the story. You can skip the really sort of challenging platforming, which, you know, I'm kind of like, why would you want to? It's wonderful. It's very well designed. It's interesting. It has sort of a cool mechanic where you have to balance two energies in your body. One makes you jump higher. One makes you jump further horizontally. And you kind of need to use that in these, you know, challenging 2D platformer segments. But they did. They wrote such a cool and personal and very kind of beautiful story that they were like, hey, if you want to just play the story, you can do that too. It's just like a mode in the game that you can do, which is cool. I like that. I like when developers kind of say, play it your way
a little bit,
you know.
Go for it. Like, that's definitely been one of those things that I've come back to again and again.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
And over the last year, around obviously conversations around difficulty, but also there was a really productive conversation earlier this year about whether or not Dark Souls should have like a story
a chill mode. Yes.
Which I thought was, regardless of where you come down on it, it was one of the few conversations about Dark Souls that still felt fresh.
Yes.
Because so often the conversations, I love Dark Souls. I will talk about Dark Souls all day. Like, but privately with my friends who also love Dark Souls, because I feel like I've talked out Dark Souls in a real way to an audience that often doesn't care about it. Or like on a dedicated podcast, like I think something like Bonfireside Chats, which is a great podcast. It's about Dark Souls. You know what you're signing up for. Go listen to it. It's great. Versus just like having the like, oh, did you know that Dark Souls is difficult conversation? Or like, did you know that Dark Souls 1 has a big interconnected world? It's like, yeah, I know. I watched that video.
Talk
we all watched
that
video. It's a
Six
good video.
Years. Yeah.
Exactly. For the record, the name of the butt fighting anime is Keijo, K-E-I-J-O, and then 8 exclamation points.
Perfect. Perfect. That sounds like a butt fighting anime.
It does.
For sure.
The thing about a lot of these sports anime is that they focus on the ways in which different teams compete against each other, and like there's a lot of drama in Japanese, like even in like Japanese wrestling, it's like this, where it's like it's about like the heart of the spirit and the heart of fighting and all of that. And one of the things that I'm curious about is that once the Overwatch League comes into being, if we'll have that same sort of like deep fandom around the New York team versus the Singapore team. Because that's actually, for me, the most interesting story of last week's video game news cycle. So BlizzCon happened.
Yes,
I'm
going to
zoom past all the stuff people actually care about, which is like new Overwatch character, Somber. She's a hacker. She's a 30-year-old hacker.
She's got a cool haircut. That's been a real thing on the internet for
sure. She's got an undercut going on.
Yeah.
Well, Diablo 3 expansion, Necromancers.
Yep, that happened.
Patrick, do you like Necromancers?
I mean, generally speaking, sure.
Like Dag coming back.
Dag just
slipped
through. Dag's had some. That's true. That's I've heard Dag has some feelings about the undead.
I don't know. Yeah, if you, I will say, I will point to like the console version of Diablo 3 is really goddamn good.
Yes.
Like, I would highly recommend folks go back and play that at some point. I did that when during some slow period with games. I did it co-op. But definitely do a co-op. By yourself, it's fine. But it is in terms of like a chill co-op game, there is few games better than the right. console versions of Diablo 3.
But for me, the big news coming out of BlizzCon, the thing that I'm most interested in, on top of all their other, like, here's a game you can go play stuff, is that they are making an esports league for Overwatch that is distinct in many ways yeah. from what its competitors are in the space of esports, right? So if you look at the other major esports leagues across genre, from first-person shooters to MOBAs to, you know, everything in between, the RTS games, it tends to be the case, fighting games even, where, like, there are teams, but those teams are organized around, hardware manufacturers or just around moneyed interests, right? It's just like, oh, this is a company like that is an esports company and they have a team.
The Pornhub team and such.
The Pornhub yeah. team yeah. and such. Exactly. Shout outs to the Pornhub team. Yeah. Good luck this season on whatever game it is you're playing.
Do your thing, folks.
But the way Blizzard is building the Overwatch League is that it's being built around international cities. And part of the way it's doing that is that, like, it's also offering salaries and benefits to players.
Yeah.
It's all about stability and long-term investment and less so about the kind of boom-bust cycle that you see in a lot of esports. Like, one of the things that I know I've noticed following esports a little bit more closely over the last few months is that you can see some great players who, like, move from team to team with rapidity. Like, that is... Not that players in traditional sports don't get traded or don't change teams. Of course that happens. Of course there are free agents and all of that. But there's a sort of like, oh, this person was on this team for 6 months. Now that team is gone.
Yeah.
And they've moved on to this other place. And I think that that's exciting in some ways because there can be lots of drama and lots of, this guy's on one team, now he's on this, oh, he's going against his old friend and blah, blah, blah. Like, that stuff's great. But you lose the sort of long tail rivalries that make sports so exciting.
Yeah.
You would never get, like, the Cubs of who are the Cubs of the esports world?
Right.
I guess in my traditional Tolstoy is the Tolstoy of the Zulus, the Cubs are the Cubs of esports. But
nice.
But
good.
I guess the thing that is exciting about this is that this is, for me, and we'll see how they actually execute on any of this, but the promise they're making about Overwatch is Overwatch League or whatever they end up calling it. Is like, oh, this is the sort of esport that I can imagine following. One, I think Overwatch is really accessible as a game to play in a way that most MOBAs are not. I don't know if either of you have played either a lot of MOBAs or a lot of Overwatch.
More Overwatch than any MOBA, for
yeah,
sure.
I played a bunch of Overwatch. I played probably like 40 hours of Overwatch and then just kind of fell off it. Because, unfortunately, I have to play other games.
Yeah, but also Overwatch is great. I actually played Overwatch for the first time the other night in a while.
Oh, my God,
and
yeah.
it's good. Not for the first time ever. Sorry.
Oh,
first
okay.
time in a
I
while.
Was very excited for
I've been, no, I've been playing.
I was going to be like, who do you ship?
Right, Pharah know? Mercy, obviously.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah, of
okay,
course.
Perfect. Come on.
But the so it's a game that I think is really accessible and is a really fantastic game to get people thinking about things like not just shipping, but also like matchups inside of the design, like the game design
yes.
sense of just like, oh, who does Pharah match up well against in combat? Like, who does Roadhog? Who's a good counter to Roadhog? Who does Genji work well against? Who does he not work well against? And that stuff is really fun to watch in the same way and to figure out in the same way that following sports is. Like, in general, for me, like when I was really into the NFL, it was a lot of like, okay, what's this defense about? What's
yeah.
this and what's
yeah.
this offensive system about? Oh, this new coach came in from San Francisco and he brought in this whole different style of offense. Let me think about what that's like.
I mean, that's the equivalent of, you know, when people use the term the meta.
Right. Totally.
That's yeah. what the meta is in the NFL.
Like. Right. Totally. 100%. Like, oh, we're seeing, or like you think about, I've said this before, but it was a shame more video game websites didn't write about the Golden State Warriors last year, who like disrupted the meta like
yeah.
badly, and they still, you know, didn't walk away as the champions, but like that was a really exciting thing from a pure like gameplay design
Absolutely.
sense. What Steph Curry was doing, what that whole team was doing, was like, oh wow, like they found a way to play that might be OP. Like, weird, is that a thing in real sports? And so being able to have those conversations about Overwatch despite having only played 40 hours like you, Patrick.
Right, you didn't have to play right. 600 hours of Dota to be able to even sort of understand
right.
kind of what's going on, to be able to have that conversation.
Exactly.
For sure. Yeah.
And then on top of that, the notion that these are players will hopefully be paid well and have benefits is great. And two, the fact that I will be able to buy like a New York whatever like jersey,
the New York Zarias,
the New York Zarias, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That like makes me weirdly excited because
it is actually kind of great. Like I like that they're taking this seriously. At least it seems like they're taking it seriously. They're taking it seriously as a real sport, and they're taking it seriously as a, you know, they're supporting this amazing kind of new property. Mm-hmm. You know, this Overwatch was sort of one of the first new properties in a very long time for Blizzard. And it's like, oh, yeah, we've got a hit here. We're going to really take it seriously. We're going to seriously support it. And we're going to we're going to make a whole new kind of league.
An international league
actually modeled after sort of what works in real life sports.
Right.
And I think that's super rad.
Well, it's because part of what works about the city stuff. Like part of what I love about being a fan of the Bears or the Cubs or any of these like Chicago teams is that they are Chicago teams, right? Like if you took the Chicago Bears and you moved them to Minnesota, I would cease to be a Bears fan. Like part of the fandom is part of like the culture where you come from, like the generational handing down of fandom,
right?
And like
pride
that
of
is
where
part
you
of
come from, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like intrinsically tied to geography.
Right.
And it is, yes, it is partially talent in the team, but like it is so much of that is geography and identifying with like the people around you who are also fans of that, because you find that allows you to kind of have a universality of what you're into or what you know about a certain place.
Right.
And it's interesting to see if they are able to successfully apply that to games in some way.
It was, you know, it's one of those things that's taken me a long time to come around on in some ways. I growing up, I was a huge sports fan. I was from South Jersey, which meant I was a Philly fan. I liked pretty much a Philly fan. So I liked the Eagles and I liked the Flyers and I liked the Phillies, but I hated the 76ers for some reason. You know what it was? It was like I grew up in the Michael Jordan era. So
there
like,
it is.
Good luck making me like anybody except for Michael Jordan.
Yeah,
exactly.
But at the same time, like I also grew up in the Troy Aikman era and fuck the Cowboys.
Yeah.
So
America's team, my ass.
Yeah, exactly. Randall Cunningham will just jump all over y'all. Anyway, so the thing, but then I went through a real long phase of like kind of hating local sports pride of just like, you know, I still kind of do a little bit of just like whenever anyone's like, oh, we did this. And it's like, were you part of the team? Did you call that play?
Yeah.
Were you the one who got that tackle?
You hit that ball. Yeah.
But I've totally, I think I've come around on the notion of like, so for a long time I hated it because it was like, it felt arbitrary and it felt nationalistic, or like it felt similar to the sort of like empty nationalism of like, oh, I like it because it's me. It's where it's mine and therefore it's mine and therefore it's good and better than yours, which is bad and not mine and othered.
There's also some gross stuff. Like,
yes,
coming from where I come from, the Boston sports fandoms have some issues.
Of course.
Like, let's be real. There's some gross, I still feel an affinity towards those teams, but like, I do not want to be a racist Red Sox fan. Like, that
sure.
is not
but the hope
what
is,
I want to be in my life.
The hope is
know?
That you could be a Red Sox fan that is not racist
exactly.
and hopefully
of course.
Push those people to not be so shitty.
Let's grow up.
Don't be a shitty racist Red Sox. Don't be
exactly.
a shitty racist anything fan.
Just
I know
don't be a shitty racist.
Soccer fandom in the or in Europe
There's
throughout
stuff
Europe
there,
has
yeah.
a lot of similar things.
For sure.
But I do think as I get older that there is a common material connectivity to you and the places you've decided to or have wound up living. And
yes.
like being able to have that common ground, being able to like root for the Knicks, even though you're completely different from them, everybody else on the subway with you is a sort of joiner that helps to create and reflect a local city character.
Yeah.
I like having more. I would like more of those things. In the same way, I would love it if the same reason I want museums to be well funded in a city. It's like, oh,
yes.
this is part of what the city is. Like, this is part of the culture of the city that we can all like be proud that we have a fucking kick ass museum. Oh, we have really great parks. We have a really great like part of that is like I want to have a really great football team, just like I want to have a really great ballet. Like,
yes.
So like when you start thinking about it as like a cultural institution that the whole city can join around, I'm like, yeah, actually, that'd be cool if on top of being able to say like we have the Met, if I could be like, we got the best fucking Overwatch team. Come get us. Like,
goddamn right.
So that's me. Get ready. I'm going to be decked out. I'm going to get whatever the New York Zarya's gear is. I'm hoping it's not
fake
just character
pink hair.
I hope it's
well,
like,
I'm sure it will. Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know. I hope it's cool. I hope it's weird and sci-fi shit. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Hey, that's the thing. Naming those teams. It's going to be a whole,
let's not talk about
a whole thing.
I'm close. I have a name I like
yeah.
for the podcast.
Yes.
But I'm not quite ready to commit to it yet.
Yeah. Almost there.
Hopefully by Friday.
Hopefully my hope is like my hope is Friday we're able to be like, here's the name and like a logo.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
like a not a logo. We don't no more logos, but like a graphic.
Yeah, little thing.
Does anybody have anything else, or should we dip into that old question bucket?
We should dip.
Is that well? Let's one just to kind of Danielle. Do you have any interest in buying a PlayStation 4 Pro? Austin's got. I guess you both have access to one.
Yeah, we have
York,
one. But... we have one under my desk at work. I didn't bring it home because I didn't think I'd have a 4K
I only TV. Want one because I desperately need another PS4. Because I had a whole thing this weekend. Me and my girlfriend had we had to go through our entire PS4. We share a PS4. She's also a game journalist. Everybody right. who knows who she is fine. And like. We are at the point where we have like 8 big ass open world games on that PS4. And I wanted to download Call of Duty. And, you know, I got the cool package that has both, you know, the new Infinite Warfare and the older game, Modern Warfare.
Right.
Remastered. And it was like Sophie's choice. It was like, oh, no, I'm not done with Mafia. She's like, I'm not done with Witcher.
Right.
And I was like, oh, are you done with Battlefield? She's like, no, I'm not done with Battlefield. We had to have a whole thing. So I'm like, I just need another console. It might as well be the Pro is right. kind of at this point.
Yeah, why not? Right. I like if it's available. I need to figure out if. Yeah, we'll see. I'm going to test it out this week, and I'll hopefully on Friday be able to talk a little bit about what my experiences are.
Yeah.
I wish there was more support for it, is what I'll say. Is that, like, when I look at the list of games that are supported, it is not as overwhelmingly positive. Not positive. There aren't that many. It's yeah. like Infamous Second Son and First Light have some good HDR stuff.
Sure.
Modern Warfare Remastered, I think, looks better. Res Infinite is something I'm curious about, but like I want to be able to put anything in there and have it be better.
Yeah.
And that is not currently the case. All right, so how about this? There's actually something I wanted to do, which is that like part of the problem with the question bucket, and there are a couple, I admit. I'm not throwing out the question bucket. I'm not throwing out the questions with the bathwater here. I'm keeping it.
Yeah.
Keeping it. We'll come back to the question bucket maybe next week.
You need the bucket for the bathwater.
Totally. You need the bucket. Hashtag need the bucket. But a thing that happens is like we keep pulling these old questions and people are writing us new yeah. questions all the time. Mm. So here's what I'm just going to pick the top email that came into our questions thing. And we're going to answer. Still quit picking the bucket. I'm yeah. just like skimming from the top.
Yeah.
What if we make that like one day, Mondays.
Right.
It's a new one.
It's a new one.
There we go.
Fridays. We'll let old emails possibly be, exactly. Make it
That's
in.
Fair.
Totally. So, so this is right from the top. Ready? Okay. Hi, dear. Good day to you. This is Malene from New Concepts in China. We specialize in many popular baby products. Want to check to see if you have a chance to do business with you. No, that's not. Yeah. I think that's spam.
I don't think that one was a real question.
I should have looked to see if it was a real question. That was not. I should not just pick the top one, I guess, yeah. in retrospect.
You know, the bucket had some value, some utility.
It did. I guess it did have something. All right. Take two. A lot of people sent in names. Thank you for sending in names. A lot of the people sent in names that we already like vetted, believe
yeah.
it or not.
Yeah.
All right. This is a good one. This is from Craig Parker, who writes, my question is, do you think VR being named virtual reality evokes expectations that are beyond the capabilities of the technology, at least currently? Is the fact that VR's branding is going toe-to-toe with reality itself, giving what success VR tech has, a sour impression because of its limitations compared to the boundlessness of the real world, and that we expect too much? And in a broader sense, do you think that games that try to evoke a scope greater than the sum of their parts suffer because they will always be unfairly compared to the grandiosity of human imagination? For example, No Man's Sky tried to bill itself as something so expansive and infinite in scope that people imagined the scope of every facet of the game to be as expansive, and many were disappointed. Anyway, I hope you keep the good work. I'm going to continue perusing all of the great work you are putting together. I worked really, really hard not to use the word content in that sentence.
Oh, very good. Good work, Craig.
Appreciate it. Shout outs to Craig Parker. Yeah, I think, I don't know that it's just like, I think there are lots of expectations around VR in general. And I wonder how often the word reality seeps into our mind around this. What do you two think?
Yeah, I think it's, first and foremost, I don't want games that have anything to do with reality. Like, right. I'm the kind of person who wants the surreality. I want the actual, the boundless imagination that he sort of describes right. at some point. So, yeah, I actually do think it's a little bit of a, I think it's more of a crutch in terms of it's evoking a 90s vision of virtual reality was a thing we talked about in the 90s, at least if you're a giant nerd.
Right.
And it's sort of evoking a lot of that stuff. It's evoking like older technology that was promising too much and then sort of died a little
right.
bit. So I don't know if it's a little bit of a crutch to be sort of relying on that more so than reality. Here's your new reality. Like, right. Technology is always hyperbolic. So,
of course,
we'll see.
Right. Patrick, as our biggest VR fan, I think. What do you think?
Yeah, names don't matter. Branding doesn't. Like, it does. Right, okay, I'm not going to completely eliminate the idea that, like, names and brands play an influence. But, I mean, you know, the biggest console of all time, the Wii. Right. Like, it was called the fucking Wii.
Yeah.
Like, so yes, does virtual reality possibly play a part? Maybe, you know, have unrealistic expectations, but I don't. Like, if VR fails, it's not because it was called virtual reality.
Yeah. Right.
And I think there are much larger, in terms of the hierarchy of forces working against VR becoming mainstream. I also think most people don't call it virtual reality. I think most people call it VR which
point.
Actually sounds a lot cooler than virtual reality.
I will say, though, that I think that the things that succeed the most so far for me in VR experiences are the ones that don't try to be quote-unquote virtual reality, right?
Like, yeah.
They're the ones that want to be a little more out of the box, or a little bit more absurd and surreal, like you said, Danielle. Like, I think about Area X in Res Infinite, or even like Job Simulator, which is like like playing at the notion of virtual reality, even, right? Like,
yeah.
The whole conceit around Job Simulator is that you put on a VR helmet and then go into an absurdly rendered version of quote unquote the past reality. And so I hope that the people who are making, I want the people who are technically good at making VR to not feel like what they need to do is make just purely human experiences. But you're right, Pat. Well, I guess that's where I think it could affect things, right? Which is that, like, if what people are dumping their resources into is, like, this needs to look lifelike,
mm-hmm.
then I'm not sure that's the way to go to get the things that convince people that VR has a future.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Though, yeah, I don't know. I also could imagine a world in which we get to where AR is a real thing, like augmented
yes.
reality,
yeah.
where I could see a company, like, doing the hit piece attack ad that is like, they make virtual reality. They're disconnected from the reality around you. We just augment the reality you're already part of.
I would be shocked if that wasn't already a thing.
I would like
somebody
to, yeah.
somewhere.
I mean, when you read about these AR companies, who are obviously the people who are doing stuff with HoloLens. Patrick, what's the company that I always not Leap Motion? Is it Leap Motion?
Yeah,
because I always want to say Leapfrog, and that is a thing for children, right?
It's an educational toy.
Yeah.
Yes,
Leap Motion, which is another kind of in development augmented reality platform. Wired had a really fantastic story about them last year. They kind of do feel like, oh, AR is the future more than VR because of this grounding that it gives you to the real world. That the world around you doesn't disappear; it changes based on what you want to. You know, put on top of it, and I think some combination of those two is probably the dream tech.
Yeah.
But I don't know. We'll see.
You're in a helmet, and you're in the real world.
Right. Exactly. Like, it sounds silly, but one of the things that I realized a lot via the PSVR helmet is just like, I wish it had a camera on it. I wish
yes.
I could look around my bedroom
yeah.
while keeping the thing on, so that I could adjust something, or so that if my phone rings, I can grab it and look at it, or if I get a text message, and that's stuff that I think the wrinkles will be ironed out probably.
The Vive does do a bunch of that
totally,
stuff already.
Totally, Vive even has like a phone in it, right, or like Skype mm-hmm. or something. So yeah, I think that's stuff that should be paid attention to, like breaking down the boundary between virtual reality and the reality. And I'm putting scare quotes around all of this
sure.
because words, but yeah. Craig, thank you so much for writing in. That was a very good question, not like the spam I got first.
You know, batting 500 right now.
That's
all right.
That's all right. Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. Thank
yeah.
you, Danielle. Exactly.
Yeah.
We'll go back to the question bucket on Friday. Things are going to be different on Friday.
Yeah.
It's the whole world.
The world is going to change tomorrow. That is a bananas thought and a true one.
So we're trying to, just so you know, we're trying to put together a stream for tomorrow so you can maybe come be anxious with us. The thing that I'm thinking
yep.
about is like, we'll do one game that is like a deep, you know, introspective thought about national character or politics or elections or something. And then the next game we'll do, it will be like really goofy. Just
yeah.
like, please untense yourself. Deep breaths. Or maybe we'll do that in like an hour.
Gotta have
blocks
some catharsis in there.
Yeah. Yeah, we're still figuring it out. We also don't technically have a space to stream from again.
Might be in the bunker.
We might be in, not this bunker, we might be in a different bunker.
Different bunker, good.
We'll figure that out. Patrick, what are you going to be doing for Election Day?
trying not to drink too early in the day.
Oh boy, just make it to noon. Just make it to noon, buddy. That's
all right. Aye, Captain.
That's what I say.
And give then that a shot.
We'll figure it out from there. Anything else going on the site this week that people should look forward to? Thinking. Oh, here's the thing that I want to shout out because we've been doing it, and maybe people don't know, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday we have a feature that goes up called Free Play, which is just like 300 short words about a game you can go play for free right now. Go check that out because there are some great writers. So far, I think Janine Hawkins, Cameron Kunzelman, and Jack DeKeet have all contributed to it. They're all favorite critics of mine, and it's cool to have them doing this short form thing where it's just like, here's a postcard from a world that you can go spend no money to be in real quick.
Yeah, I think it's cool that, you know, I just think I'm really proud that we're doing some non-commercial stuff.
Me too.
It just makes me happy.
Me too.
It's like,
and,
yeah.
And so go check that out. You can find that if you click, there's like a little icon on our website, waypoint.vice.com or waypoint.zone or bazinga.zone,
bazinga.zone
or digitalpyramids.com.
There you go.
That like opens up a little sidebar and it's in the top left. You hit that and then you go to play, and then everything under that is just like free stuff you can go play right now. What else?
I think I have a interview with the designer of Sunrun Kagura,
yes.
Awesome. Otherwise known as the Busty Brawler series, in which I was interested in speaking with him because he's one of the few Japanese game designers that sort of openly embraces the fact that his games have like scantily clad women and really infuse action and sexuality. And he's very articulate. You may disagree with why he does it, but he also isn't ashamed of doing that. I'm not even saying that other Japanese designers that do that are ashamed of what they're doing.
But they just haven't spoken publicly about their
They just
reasoning.
Don't talk about it, especially not in Western media.
Right.
And so we had a full interview kind of diving into his process and why he makes the games he does and his views on even criticism of that. And so that'll be sometime this week.
Cool. Look
at some
to
point
that.
Gonna get around to explaining to everyone the conclusion to the Poise Saga in Dark Souls
3.
Right. Very excited
to that.
For that. Let's stay tuned for that because that's a big one.
Yeah.
And then, Patrick, at some point we should talk about effect and cause. I think maybe you and I should talk about it and then put that up as like an IM transcript.
Good.
Okay.
That sounds like a fun... We live in the world of new media. We do whatever we want.
That's right.
You can find me at twitter.com/Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
They can find me at Danielle RI.
What about you, Patrick?
At Patrick Klubik and on Facebook over at P Klubik.
I'm not going to give Facebook names. I'm done. We'll see.
You're over it?
We'll see. We'll see on Friday. We're out with Facebook. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see what happens in the election
Make
tomorrow.
Make some decisions tomorrow.
You know? Yeah, tomorrow could change a lot.
Be a ballot Make the measure decisions. Somewhere.
Shout outs to Tim Barnes, who's producing the podcast. Shout outs to Mitch Racken, who's our engineer. Shout outs to Bo N, whose song Miss You off of the EP Pale Machine is our theme. You can find out more at bo-n.info. Bo-n.info. bo-en.info 3 times. There it is. If you're going to email me, just rewind a little bit and say, oh, who made that song? It's Bowen.
Make sure to vote tomorrow.
Yeah, get out there. Go vote. Please go vote about the world.
Please vote.
And look into some local and state elections also and know who you should be voting for there also. Things are on the line, it turns out. So check that out. Thank you so much and good luck. Tune in with us tomorrow on twitch.tv/waypoint. Peace.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.